Hey everybody, welcome to Braving the Journey. I am your host, Zach Mathers. Hey, in the show notes, there's a link to a Patreon account. And that Patreon account, what that is it's a space that if you are an listener to Braving the Journey and you like the show, you like what you hear, you're someone that listens all the time, you think there's value in it, Patreon's a place that you can actually go and financially support to help be able to keep braving the journey, doing what it's doing, for me to be able to keep creating space and time to keep having guests on and having shows. So if you want to, be sure to go to the show notes, follow the link, and yeah, be someone that supports the show. On top of that, go to bravingthejourney.com. There you can find out everything you need to about getting connected with a one-on-one coach, doing kind of recovery life coaching. And there's a whole bunch more resources that are coming out soon. So I'm really, really excited to share with you guys. But for this moment, this time right now, I have Jan Cole on. And she has a powerful, powerful story. If you or somebody you know has ever had a child that has struggled in addiction or is stuck in addiction, and her story is going to be significant and valuable for you to hear, because there's just so much that she shares about. I'm gonna just stop. I'm gonna let you listen. So here you go, guys. Let's check this out. Well, welcome to Braving the Journey. I'm your host, Zach Mathers, and I have Jan Cole on with me today. And I just want to say, Jan, thanks for taking the time and the vulnerability just to be able to kind of share with us your story and your kind of journey. And so thanks for being here.
Thanks for asking me.
Yeah. And so share with us, I mean, like, kind of start with us, just kind of a little bit about your story and kind of bringing people into, your journey and what addiction has kind of done in your realm of life, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, I lost a daughter 3.5 years ago. She was 39 years old and she died from a drug addiction. It was a long, long drug addiction, a very serious one that lasted probably 19 years. And it's just my story of how I was able to travel that road and the pain and the ups and the downs and the good and the bad and just come out the other side. Hmm. Her addiction involved 5 children. She had 5 children.
Yeah.
And the pain that was inflicted on those children, as well as myself and my husband and our other 3 children.
Yeah. Now, was this daughter kind of the only one that struggled with kind of addiction issues in the family?
Yes. Yes, she was.
What? And so 19 years, you kind of said.
Mm-hmm.
Help me understand. I mean, I'm a dad of, 3 kids. They're young kids. And you know, there's always a fear that inside of me that's like, man, I hope they don't struggle with an addiction issue.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's not only painful, life-changing, terrible situation for them, but like even those around us, you know. But like, what did it look like in the midst of it all for you as far as, I mean, did you guys support trying to get her into like, treatment centers, or was it like hard love that or did you try everything, or where was your guys's role, I guess, in it?
I think your last statement was the truth. You try everything.
Yeah.
And that's what we tried. It started out, when she was about in her 19 even.
Yeah.
And I mean, she was a really good kid. She was just a perfect child. And then she got in the wrong crowd. Hmm. She started hanging out with the wrong people. But the last thing in my mind that I thought she was involved with was drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't go there.
No.
You really, I mean, not my daughter.
Right.
And then she got pregnant when she was 19. She decided she was going to move in with a girlfriend, get into the party scene, the drug scene, while she was pregnant. But I still didn't believe that she was on drugs.
Yeah.
She had a daughter, and she attempted to raise her daughter, mother the daughter, provide the love that child needed. It all fell terribly wrong. She abandoned the child. And we then took her daughter into our home and took her as our own.
Yeah, and so that daughter's kind of been your guys' daughter.
She has, yeah.
She's your granddaughter, but you've really raised her.
Right. And it was a back and forth thing because Chris, that's my daughter's name is Chris. Okay. She would be in her daughter's life and then she would disappear for 2 or 3 weeks. And then she'd come back into her life. And this was very, very confusing for the child.
Yeah.
Because we were grandma and grandpa, but we were also mom and dad.
Yeah, you had to play the authority figures, you know, because nobody else was.
Exactly.
Yeah, my wife and I have done foster care for 10 years, and we've had a couple cases where the kids have come with us, went back to parents relapsed, messed up, disappeared again, kids come back into our care, you know, and you just see this, like, just it just destroys them because they're just looking for a stable parent.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah.
You know, and they're wondering why this parent just constantly disappears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did your daughter ever have moments of like long chunks of sobriety in any of this time, 19 years or?
I would say there was not long chunks. There might be a period of a month or two.
Yeah.
But they're very deceitful drug addicts.
Yep.
And a lot of times she would convince me that she was doing well and that she was on a road to recovery. And then you would find drug paraphernalia in her room or she would sneak out at night, those kinds of things. Yep. So, you know, it was hard to really put a finger on how long she was sober for.
Right.
Or drug-free for.
So, say, continue with your story. So, 19, has a baby.
Yeah.
Kind of off on her own. You guys take this child in to your guys' care. Mm-hmm. Where does the story kind of go from there?
Well, it went from there. I'm from Canada, and we live in a large city called Edmonton. And there was a point when I thought that I could help my daughter, Chris, by taking her away from the situation.
Yeah.
She was in a situation where her partner was also a drug addict. So I convinced her to go to British Columbia, and her and I would take her daughter and stay with her grandmother, my mother.
Yeah.
And we would just get her right out of that situation. Mm. And I was really hopeful at that point that this was going to pull her away from that drug scene.
Yeah, like stepping away from all the
the people
and the connections to it, and even the triggers. You know, there's certain spaces we see and stuff that just trigger.
So, a lot of triggers.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the point when I was the most hopeful. She was put into a treatment center for mothers with children, and she was in there for about a month. Mm-hmm. And I flew back home again, confident that she was going to really change her ways. It wasn't to be. She ended up bringing that fellow that was in her life. And, you know, they did drugs together. That's how she got started on drugs. And she brought him to her. And they abandoned the child in British Columbia. And they went to Vancouver.
Oh, wow.
And they lived in, if anybody's been to Vancouver, there's a really rough area. It's Hastings.
Okay.
Seaside. And they lived on the streets there.
Okay.
So then there was her daughter that she abandoned.
Yeah.
Was left in you know, in the interior of British Columbia. So social services stepped in. They were going to take the child. They got a hold of my name as grandmother and said, would you consider taking the child because she's going to go into foster care?
Yeah.
So we did. We took her, and we took her as our own, and she's our daughter, and we're mom and dad. And from that point, Chris and her significant, they were in Vancouver. We were attempting to track her down because I wanted to go for custody, and I needed her consent.
Yeah.
So my husband flew to Vancouver, walked the streets of Skid Row looking for her, was able to find her. At this point, she was 3 months pregnant again.
Oh, wow.
Brought her back to our hometown, flew her back. At that point, she was 90 pounds.
Yeah.
And very, very sick because she had been doing drugs, hard drugs.
Yeah.
I didn't even believe she was still pregnant because she was so tiny.
Yeah.
So after we kind of, I didn't even ask her that. It just didn't seem important at that point. Well, I had her back. I thought, okay, we're gonna work on this, and she's gonna be fine. And she did. She was pregnant, and she had a baby boy. And the baby was healthy. Mm. God had his hand in it because he had his hands around this baby, and the baby was born and adopted out to a Christian family.
Okay. Cool. Are you guys in touch at all with them anymore? Or is that kind of
a
private adoption?
It was an open adoption. But I think, you know, for the most part, Chris didn't have much contact, well, any contact with him. For the first year, she got pictures and that kind of thing. I did, that child is now, well, Sadie, that's the daughter that we are guardians of. She's going to be 23. Yeah. And Nathan was the next child that was adopted out, and he is 21.
Okay.
And when my daughter passed away, I phoned his adopted mom and dad because I thought that they should know, he should know that his mom had died.
Yeah.
And that's when I got a hold of his dad.
Oh, wow. Such a heavy, you know, heaviness to your story. Did, in all of this, did you hold on to hope or did you lose hope at some point of like, my daughter's never going to be able to break this addiction?
No, I never lost hope. Yeah. I mean, there were some really dark times.
Yeah.
And I'll share with them a little bit. But it's just, there was times when I thought, you know, is she ever going to come out of this? But you always hope. Always hope that something's going to change. Mm. And there was one point that I really thought this was going to turn her around.
But. Yeah, so keep sharing us your story. I want to kind of hear
the flow.
Stop interrupting. And just share with us, and then I'll kind of, we'll dive into some more questions towards the end of the story.
Okay, so after Nathan was adopted out, she ended up marrying this fellow that had got her into the drugs, and they had another little boy. Mm-hmm. And his name is Liam, and he is now 8 years old. No, pardon me, he is 12 years old, and he has quite a story that I'll share with you as well. After him, there was another little boy, and this was just very, very tragic. Cash was his name, and when he was born an addicted crack baby. Mm. And that was the most gut-wrenching thing I have seen, is a child screaming, going through drug withdrawals.
Oh, yeah.
It was horrendous. He died at 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
And the autopsy showed that he had drugs in his system.
Mm. At 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
Still. Do you believe that was a still from the pregnancy process, or... or drugs were introduced to him after you'd been born?
I have questions about that.
Yeah.
Chris at that point was on methadone, mm-hmm. prescribed by a doctor. And she was breastfeeding him.
Yeah.
And because that baby was craving drugs so bad, the only thing that calmed him was the breast milk, because the breast milk contained methadone.
Yeah.
So it calmed him down. Mm. So when they did the autopsy, they found breast milk.
Yeah.
I mean, they found methadone in him, which they attributed possibly to the breast milk.
Yeah.
I have some questions about that.
Yeah.
And the authorities did too.
Yeah. So that was fourth?
We have Sadie, Liam, Nathan, Cash. That was the fourth one.
Cash, yeah.
And there was another child.
Did she ever, in all of this, try to step back into rehab in any way, or doing anything, or was she just full blown? I'm a
full blown addict.
Addict. Yeah.
Full blown addict.
Okay.
No, she never went back to treatment. The closest she got was the methadone program.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't. Well, there was actually one time she did. Both her and her significant did go to a treatment program. And they were there for a couple of months.
Yeah.
But I think they were still in their drugs at that
point. That's the hardest thing. It's like, you know, if you could do everything in the world as far as treatment centers, all the, if you don't really, really deep down want it,
mm-hmm.
you know, you mm-hmm. can find a way to bring drugs into a treatment center. You could find ways to, you know, you could, it just doesn't matter. It's like, it comes down to a core of like, being so desperately ready to see change that you'll surrender anything to it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think Chris had gone down that road, that dark road where she lost so much.
Yeah, to lose child, you know? Yeah.
Lose all her children.
Yeah.
And, you know, and have to bear that guilt of knowing that you could have possibly caused the death of one of your children through, whether it be methadone through the breast milk or just whatever the circumstances were. Mm. And it was, you know, at that point, I thought, well, maybe this is it. Maybe this is her turning point. Because how bad can it get to lose the child?
Yeah, where you hear this conversation so often about rock bottom. You're like, okay, maybe this is
this has got to be rock bottom.
Yeah.
And it's still, you know, she was rocked by that loss. She was sobbing and hysterical and confused by it.
Yeah.
And denial was in there. And
how much at this stage were you guys involved in her life? I mean, was she pretty on her own, you know, or was she?
We weren't involved a lot. We live in although I mentioned Edmonton, we do live in a bedroom community outside of Edmonton, which is a small little town. And Chris lived probably, you know, 10 minutes away.
Okay.
But with Chris, was different than a lot of addicts in some ways, from what I can understand, is that when she was in her worst, I never heard from her.
Yeah.
Whereas some addicts are always trying to get money off of you and manipulate you and those kinds of things. I knew she was using when I didn't hear from her.
Yeah.
And so there would be long periods of time, months.
Yeah.
You know, birthdays would go by, Christmas would go by, and I wouldn't hear from her. Mm-hmm. And I'd think, okay, she's using
right
again.
Now.
It's bad.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
And I think that's I think that's more common than you realize. I think some people know, like, to step away from the people that love them the most and care for them the most. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had people in my life that, you know, they don't call back, they don't text back, they don't reach out. You know, they're gone.
Yeah.
At that point, and you know they're not in a good space.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's how it kind of looked with Chris.
Okay. So she had one more child.
Yes, she did.
Okay.
She was probably in the worst, deepest part of her addiction, and she was using needles, anything, crack, heroin, anything she could get her hands on. And I didn't know that she was pregnant again.
Yeah.
For probably about 3 months. And then when I found out about it, and I was questioned her about using drugs and being pregnant again, and she got very angry at me and just kind of told me to mind my own business.
Yeah.
What had happened is she had used a dirty needle to inject when she was 24 weeks pregnant, and she developed a bacterial infection around her heart. And she was apparently critically sick, but had not sought any medical intervention for her or her unborn child. And her significant phoned an ambulance. They took her to the hospital. Her heart had stopped. The unborn child's heart had stopped. So in emergency, they did a cesarean section.
Mm-hmm.
and delivered a 24-week-old baby girl. Her name is Emma. They resuscitated her. They put both mom and child on life support. But the child's heart had stopped for over 6 minutes, and she was clinically brain dead. Yeah. But she had, they got her going again in her heart.
Okay.
So, anyway, that was the lowest of lows.
Yeah.
Chris was in intensive care. They had chest tubes in, six chest tubes in. They had her on dialysis. She had a tracheotomy. She was on a respirator. She was bloated, twice the size. I couldn't even recognize her. You just thought the images in your head. And then we were called twice to the hospital, early morning. And the second time that we were called, and then a day went past, she sort of stabilized, and then she crashed again. And we got called in again, the whole family. And I was at the door of the emergency room, and the doctor, attending doctor and head nurse said, "You can't go in just yet. We're working on her."
Yeah.
And I said, "What do you mean you're working on her?" And they said, "She's flatlined, and they're doing chest compressions on her."
Yeah.
So that went on, it seemed like forever, while I'm sitting in the waiting room. And finally, the nurse came back in, and she said, "You can see her now." To say goodbye.
Yeah.
So I went in there, and there was people all around the bed doing all sorts of things. And the attending physician, intensive care doctor, said, "Let's set up chest tube 7. And he explained to me afterwards, I said to him, "Thank you so much for not holding back any treatment and just doing whatever you can." And he said, "She's 39. She's too young."
Hmm.
So they put the chest tube in, and her heart started to beat again. And she started to breathe.
Yeah.
And he explained to me that, he said, because there was so much infection in her chest, you couldn't see where to successfully insert these chest tubes. Purpose of a chest tube is to drain out the infection and the fluid so that the lungs can expand again.
Yeah.
And he said, "It's like looking for oil with your eyes shut. You're stabbing in the dark."
Yeah.
And he said, "I just got lucky." Mm-hmm. And it drained this fluid so that her heart started again.
So she recovered through all this?
She did.
Okay.
She was in intensive care for 2 months. They had to do quite a few surgeries on her because she had so much scar tissue on her lungs and stuff. And she was on dialysis. And
then how long after that situation until she passed?
She was in the hospital for a total of 3 months. And at the end of the 3 months, she was doing really well. You know, she was
probably the longest sobriety. Right?
It was
the longest period where her body's like flushed clean.
It wasn't flushed clean. And I say that because the fact that she was on painkillers, she was on anti-anxiety medication, she was on all kinds of medications, but this was provided by the hospital, right?
So she's on a different track of drugs, basically.
But she's still on drugs.
Yeah.
And I remember going into her room, and she would be just sitting there, very comfortable, having a great conversation with me, not hooked up to even oxygen at this point. She was doing so well. But I think that the hospital was sort of holding on to her because they were trying to treat her addiction.
Right.
They had social workers involved and drug counselors and all those things, supports for her. But as soon as the nurse would come in, you could see her face change. Mm. She wasn't smiling anymore. And she would ask for a pain medication. And the nurse would say, "Well, you just had something an hour ago. I can't give you anything." "Well, can I have something for anxiety?" "No, I just gave you something for that." "Well, I'm sick to my stomach."
Yeah.
So the nurse became the drug dealer.
Yeah, so she's just longing for it from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets out of the hospital, though.
She does. She discharged herself.
Okay.
They wanted to keep her longer. And that was the last time I saw her.
Hmm.
She died 3 months later of a drug overdose.
Oh, man.
And when I got that phone call that morning that they had attempted to resuscitate her, EMS attempted to resuscitate her, and they were unsuccessful.
Yeah.
And I had questions because there was that 3 month period that I she would never call me.
Yeah.
And so I talked to the paramedics and I talked to the police just to get that
picture
of what had happened. And they told me that in 1 month they had been called three times to resuscitate her, give her Narcan, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Hmm.
She was still using.
Yeah. That's a long 19-year road.
Oh.
I mean, and that doesn't even, those words don't even speak justice, yeah. I don't think.
You know what it's like, Zach? And I just, it's like being the parent of a child who is standing on a 60-floor skyscraper, and for 19 years they're telling you they're going to jump.
Yeah.
It's like attempting suicide for 19 years, and you just keep saying, you keep trying to talk them back, talk them off the wall, but they're still standing there.
Let's talk about you and all this. I mean, how did you keep sane, I guess? What did your care look like for you to be in that spot? Like, that's the best analogy of like just 19 years of someone saying they're going to just jump, and mm-hmm. you're trying to stand there and come up with everything you could think of to help mm-hmm. convince them not to.
Yeah. Well, I have a wonderful husband.
Yeah.
He is the love of my life and the support of my life. I have God. I have my faith in God. Without that, I think I might have, it would have just been a different journey for me.
Let me ask you about that with faith of God. Like, did you ever get to a space where you were just angry? Angry at God, angry at the situation?
Oh, yeah.
And how did you handle, what'd you do with that, I guess?
Yeah, no, there was just a lot of anger. And then I had a lot of support. I had support with the church. And then I just thought, well, this isn't God's doing, this is Chris's choices.
Yeah.
And she was offered in this 19 years, so many crossroads, so many stop signs, so much support from people where she could have chosen a different path.
Yeah.
And she didn't.
Yeah.
So this wasn't God doing this. This was her doing it to herself.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
And then we have three other children.
Yeah.
And then, of course, our granddaughter, who we call our daughter. So I have a large support system.
Yeah. And how was it for that? I mean, in all this, like, back and forth and being in the hospitals and seeing grandchildren pass, like, mm-hmm. was your other kids involved in this?
Yes. Each one in their own way.
Yeah.
Like, everybody was different. Because there's 7 years difference between Chris and the next child.
Yeah.
She was a mother role in a lot of ways to the other three.
Right.
And so they really looked up to her.
Yeah.
And so the one that's 7 years younger than her, she adored her sister. Mm. She just thought that the sun rose and set on her. Everything that Chris wanted to do, she wanted to do. So when Chris went down this path, she was very angry.
Yeah.
Like, this is the person I looked up to.
Yeah.
And this is what they've done to their life.
Mm. What would you, so, if you really look at it this way, I mean, like, every addict, every alcoholic, whatever the choice of drug or disease is, whatever it is, has a parent, And so the reality is, some may have parents that are involved and some may have parents that aren't at all and are in their own addiction. But, what do you, just thinking of that, like, that means there's a lot of parents out there that are walking through this road that you kind of did mm-hmm. and are hurting and are feeling this sense of like, all I feel like I'm doing is trying to get them off the ledge.
Yeah.
What would you, from being someone that's gone through this, what What do you say to them?
And I say, don't give up. Yeah. Just keep trying. I mean, I would have wished Chris's story was different, but it is what it is. That was her actions. But just keep fighting the fight.
Yeah.
You know, just keep putting those stops in front of them. Try everything you can. And then when you've tried it all, start over and try it all again.
Yeah. Yeah, because you never know.
You never know. There might be something that will click.
Yeah.
So don't give up. Don't ever give up. And boy, it can get dark.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much in that story where I think it would be easy to just wash your hands of it, walk away, and say, yeah, we're done. Like, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
But
I just wanted to sort of talk a little about Emma's journey.
Yeah.
That was the little girl that was born at 24 weeks.
Okay.
That was clinically brain dead. She was adopted into a foster home, a medical foster home.
Okay.
And so right from the hospital, so there was a period of 6 months there where I lost track of her.
Yeah.
She was in the hospital, then she was taken and adopted into a foster medical home. And at that point, I couldn't deal with it. I couldn't deal with one more thing. Chris was barely surviving in intensive care. This baby was barely surviving, and I just couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
So I didn't know whether she was dead or alive at this point. I have reconnected with her.
Okay.
And she is now 4.5 years old. Every special occasion, I talk to her medical foster mom. And because of COVID, I can't go see her, but I have seen her.
Yeah.
She's a fighter.
Yeah.
There was one point where she was in the hospital 2 years ago, and that's the first time that I went to see her. And that was, it took every bit of courage I had to go and see her after 2 years.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was going to see because at that point she was on a respirator.
Yeah.
And I held her and I cried. And the foster mom held me, and we cried.
Yeah.
And that little girl survived that. Even the doctor said, he said, we're going to take her off of the respirator on Wednesday. This was Friday. And I thought, that's like a death sentence, like to take somebody off a respirator.
Yeah.
But he said there was no hope. Well, Emma had a different plan. He took her off the respirator and she continued to breathe. So she has, and through all of what this has looked like, there is some beautiful, beautiful stories that have come out of it, and some beautiful things. Emma's one of them. She is, she's blind, she's deaf, she has cerebral palsy, she has constant seizures. But the joy that that child has given her foster mom is beautiful to see.
That's incredible. And, you know, it's, I always admire those foster parents or those ones that can, that take on such a, I mean, it's such a high need situation and can show such a compassion and love. And it's just, it's incredible.
Yeah.
You know.
And there's one other beautiful story that has come out of this, and that is with the 12-year-old child. His name was Liam. He had been living with his parents, but due to the circumstances was taken away at least on 4 occasions and put into a foster home.
He was the one that was adopted?
No, he never was adopted. He's the only child they actually kept.
Okay.
But he was taken away from
taken
them eventually.
Taken away numerous times. Yeah.
And we connected with him. We connected with his foster mom. My one daughter and her husband connected with him again. They have 2 children of their own. Brought him out. They live on an acreage. Child's dream, right? Horses, cats, dogs, you name it, chickens. And they took Liam out there for visits. And they fell in love with him. And he fell in love with them. And Liam's choice, he said, Auntie, can you adopt me?
Yeah.
This was after Chris had passed away.
Oh, wow.
And she said, absolutely. So they're in the final stages of the final adoption. He's lived with them now for over 2 years.
You guys, I like listen to your family story, and you know, it's like you have found ways to create the beauty out of the chaos, mm-hmm. you know, and addiction is that. It's just, it brings destruction and chaos.
Yeah.
And it's painful. And like, but yeah, like just hearing even that part of the story, you know, it's like you chose love over it all. And to me, I always look at it and goes, love's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And it does.
It does. It's going yeah. to, you know, yeah. and, you know, even Liam, like he's going to have a story that he,
mm-hmm.
you know, gets to help impact and change the world. And now he has a family that he gets to, that loves him. And,
right. Know? Right. Yeah. This, you know, happiness doesn't always look the same. I mean, no. for every story, but this one, it did. There's some really great, wonderful things have happened. The next, like her, with Chris, and then the next daughter, the 7 year, the one that adored her daughter so much, or adored her sister so much.
Yeah.
She went into counseling and is now a psychologist. And while she's just graduated, she's been looking for different jobs and trying to find her niche of where yeah. she would help people the most. And she said, Mom, every time I go for a job interview, they ask me if I want to do addiction.
Hmm.
And that's the last thing I want to do is addiction.
Yeah.
Because I lived it with my sister and I don't think I've got any more to give.
Yeah.
Well, that was quite a few months ago, and she now has a job counseling addicts.
Yeah.
She said, it just was what I was meant to do. She said, it was just crazy because all the doors shut except that one.
Yeah.
So.
It makes, yeah. I mean, but those are those people are going to be the most success. I mean, just passionate about their job and what they do. Like, even for myself, like when I started a podcast, I wanted to be that podcast that was for, you know, for everybody and like just this uplifting, like you're going to listen to it and be like, oh, like, I get my encouragements and my, you know, how to's of life,
mm-hmm.
you know, but the reality for me is like, I realized, I was like, I have such a story in my own recovery through alcoholism
mm-hmm.
that I just realized, I was like, people need to hear.
You do.
And, you know, and people need to hear because in the midst of everything, they need to be able to go, there's hope and there's multiple ways to find recovery.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just one.
Yeah.
And like your story, sometimes you don't, but you still can hold on to hope.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally you do.
What would you, I just think of so many people that are here listening to this probably and going, my child is in the middle of it right now. And, you know, you did say, you know, don't lose hope. But what I just even like, how do you even not like, did you find when you were saying like in that, like don't lose hope, were you always fighting for something for her, or did sometimes you, I guess you couldn't even contact her. So you had to just sit back and
right.
let her do her thing.
Huh? Right. Right. But you just always, I don't know, you just really, you know, and a lot of it too, I guess thinking back now, she was a great person.
Yeah.
She had a lot to offer. She was bright and she was the tiniest little thing. She was 4'10", but boy, could she fill a room. She had a big laugh and yeah. a big smile
yeah.
and a big heart, a huge heart. So those are the things I hang on to.
No, I think that's good.
Yeah.
Because I do. I think drugs rob people.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, of all those.
Your dignity.
Yeah, all those everything. Qualities, all those stuff. And then you're left with the shell of a person.
Yeah.
But, you
yeah.
know, and. Yeah. I think that's good to be able to tell people like to hold on to what you know is true.
For sure.
Because it's
yeah.
in there.
Yeah, she's still there. But you're right. It really, there's times when she was in her addiction, I wouldn't recognize her. I don't even know who you are.
Yeah.
But then you'd find little glimmers. Okay, mm-hmm. yeah, there it is. Yeah. There she is.
Yeah, and you got to hold on to that.
Yeah.
Well, Jan, I do. I want to say thank you. You know, your story is not an easy one to share. But I think your story is also such an impactful one that Because what I've come to believe so strongly in this world of addictions and different things is we as humans isolate when we're in the struggle of it,
mm-hmm.
Because we believe this really simple lie that we're the only ones in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so even when someone can maybe hear your story and go, wow, I'm not alone. There's some other parent that went through it too.
Yeah.
And they may know that, but I think hearing it sometimes and getting to hear someone's story and go, you know, and to me, the first step of being able to step into community and reach out for help is just the awareness of going, I'm not alone.
Right.
And this is okay.
Yeah.
You know, and now I can ask for, you know, support.
Yeah.
You know, because like you said, like you had an amazing husband to support you. You had your family. You had the community of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Like those are all things that I couldn't imagine going through what you went through without it.
Yeah.
You know?
And my takeaway from the whole thing is I just thought, and I've wanted to do this, what we're doing today.
Yeah.
I wanted to share my story because I thought I didn't go through this just for me.
Mm-hmm.
There's just too much there. There's too much pain. There's too much of a story. There's too much of life, ups and downs, just to have gone through this for myself. God didn't. You know, I didn't go through this just for me.
No.
So I felt I need to reach out to help other people and listen to their stories. And they listen to my stories. And through that, I will hopefully heal as much as maybe I can help somebody else.
No, I agree. So last question I always love to ask my guests is, okay, imagine that everybody turned off all their social media and all the noise and the news and, your voice was the only thing that got to be heard and everybody was listening to you. What would be one truth that you'd want to tell the world?
Is that drugs are evil. I think drugs, alcohol, addiction, the devil doesn't need a stronger tool than drugs, because that robs the individual. It takes them out of your family. It destroys families. It destroys kids. It's just such a strong, powerful thing, and it changes people.
Yeah.
And yeah, you got to sometimes scratch the layers to find your child under all of that, but they're still there.
Yeah.
So just don't give up. Just keep fighting and just do what you got to do.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it takes, don't give up.
Hmm. No, I think that's such a good truth. And I hope, for you guys listening, like, you may need to hear that just right now. Just that simple, don't give up. Like, just, there's hope, you know? And so, well, Jan, I want to just say thank you so, so much again for being willing to just share your story.
Well, it was... It's a privilege to share it.
Hey, everybody. Jan wanted to make sure that you guys know. So also in the show notes, there's her email. And so if you connected to her story and you just want to talk, maybe you're in a situation where you have a kid, one of your children is still in the midst of a heavy addiction and you're hopeless. You don't know what to do and you're just done. She wanted to make sure that you knew that you can email her. Just email her and just say, hey, I just need to talk to someone. I just need to find hope again because I don't have any. And so I just want to encourage you guys. That's there. It's in the show notes. Make sure to go find it. Reach out. Go to bravingthejourney.com. You know, we're not putting these podcasts together and all this stuff just to talk. You know, to be honest, I believe alcoholism, drugs, just the addictions that are out there can be so damaging to not just the person, but to everyone around them that loves them. And it is so destructive and so hard that I just want to see people freed from it, free to live into who they truly are and to be able to love themselves and others around them well. All right, you guys have an amazing, amazing day. Bye.